Michael Spector has been a staff writer at The New Yorker since 1998. He focuses on science, technology, and public health. Since joining the magazine, he has written about agricultural biotechnology, the global AIDS epidemic, avian influenza, malaria, the world's diminishing freshwater resources, synthetic biology, the debate over the meaning of our carbon footprint, and new ways to edit DNA. Spector came to The New Yorker from The New York Times, where he had been a roving foreign correspondent based in Rome. From 1995 to 98, he served as The Times Moscow bureau chief. Since 2012, he's been a visiting professor at Bard College in the Department of Environmental and Urban Affairs. Michael Spector is here to tell us about his Friday night talk at the Mahewey Theater in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. That talk entitled Editing the Human Genome, the Possibilities and Perils. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Michael Spector to the roundtable this morning. Michael, good morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure. Happy to be there.
Very nice to have you on the program. When people come out to hear you talk at the Mahewey, what can they expect?
Hopefully they'll be excited and possibly a little afraid, because I'm going to talk about our ability to sort of alter the fundamental code of life, which is something that we are getting very good at doing. And that is both incredibly exciting and possibly frightening as well.
Why is it frightening? I agree with you, but why is it frightening?
Well, in general, I think the greater the possibilities of new technologies, it seem to be also the higher the theoretical risks. But in this particular case, we can do some things that would sound wonderful and may in fact be wonderful, but it's sometimes difficult to know what the repercussions will be either soon or way down the line. And those are decisions we'll need to make as a society, and we'll probably need to make them fairly soon and in ways that we haven't made them before.
We don't seem to have a really good track record in making decisions like that, though, do we?
I believe that's known as understatement. we have a terrible track record at that.
Yes.
This is, not only do we have a bad track record at that kind of decision, there's no regulatory framework set in place in this country for a bunch of people to get together and say, hey, let's edit malaria out of mosquitoes, or let's edit Zika virus out, or let's make it so you can't inherit muscular dystrophy. Those things all are wonderful ideas, but they require huge amounts of not just scientific effort, but societal agreement. And we just have not had a lot of experience with that. In the past, the paradigm of scientists has been, I'm in the lab, I discovered something, and it's discovered now, and you'll use it. And that has created a lot of animosity, understandably. And I have to say that the generation of scientists that's working on these problems in this way really don't want that to happen again.
So let's use the example you just gave and go with that, which is editing malaria out of mosquitoes. So how do you do that? How is that done?
Okay, this is all somewhere between real and theoretical. It's not just theoretical because people have done it in a lab, but in this case, you can do one of two things. You can change DNA around in mosquitoes so that when they mate, they die, and they mate a lot, and they'll get wiped out. A slightly more elegant approach would be to make it impossible for the Anopheles mosquito, which is the malaria one, to carry the falciparum parasite that causes malaria. And you can edit the DNA of the mosquito so it is resistant to that. And that sounds great, and I think it is actually great, but I was talking to a very brilliant scientist. I'm in Cambridge these days working on this book, and, you know, she said, this is fabulous, and hundreds of thousands of people die of malaria every year, but you also have to remember, if we edit this mosquito in this way, it will be lighter. And if it's lighter, it will have a different role in the environment, and that, for all we know, will make it possible for it to carry something even more deadly than malaria. We just don't know. We can't see down the road. I'll give you another really brief example. HIV. We can edit the receptors that allow HIV to enter our T cells. We can do that. We're doing it with drugs, and we could do it with CRISPR. And that would seem great. And I'll also tell you another thing that you'll think is a no-brainer, which is when you do that, you raise the risk for being susceptible to West Nile disease. Right. Now, West Nile is not fatal. It's not epidemic. It's nothing like AIDS. And there are very few people today who would say, gee, let's worry about West Nile. It's very difficult to look down the road 1,000 years from now and know for sure that that would be the right decision. There's lots of examples where it might not have been. You know, 200,000 years ago, if we had this technology, we would have looked at sickle cell, which was developed, which evolution developed to protect Africans from malaria. It blocks the malaria from getting into a blood cell. So I think a couple hundred thousand years ago, everyone calling into your show would be saying, hey, let's give everyone sickle cell so no one can have malaria. And then an enormous portion of the earth would be dead. These are just very complicated systems.
So, to me, the rule of thumb has always been don't screw around with nature. So is that, is that a naive approach?
Incredibly.
Okay.
We've been screwing around with nature since we were born. We've been modifying food since we were born. Go to a grocery store and bring me something that isn't modified other than some produce. It'll be salt and mineral water.
Absolutely.
And we build roads. This is what humanity has done. You can argue about whether we've done it with a great deal of skill or care for the rest of the species, but we do it. So the question, I think the more germane question is, how do you add up the risks and benefits and make decisions? Because I think some of these CRISPR applications are going to seem well worth the risk. And some probably aren't. Actually, the HIV one right now, there are drugs that treat HIV that are very effective. So, you know, do you want to try to change the fundamental code of life to do that? Right now, I'll bet the answer would be no. On the other hand, malaria, you know, mosquitoes live 8 days. If you can figure out a way to get rid of malaria, you can also figure out, what most scientists working on this will tell you is they would never do something like this unless they could undo it. Now, undoing things you do in genetic code and in nature is a tricky business, but it's not as tricky in something like a mosquito, which lives 8 days and flies 100 yards in its lifetime. So you could imagine a scenario where you did this, and if you wanted to undo it, you could undo it. It's going to be harder to undo humanity or large mammals. There are many things in the environment that you might want to do to save species that are about to get extinct, and that seems great. It's very difficult to know if you do that, if you make a mistake, how you undo it, because, you know, if you have 8,000 black-footed ferrets running around in the wild, and we've edited their genome and we find out, oops, we made a mistake, and we can't really call them and say, could you all please come into a clinic? We need to give you a shot.
We need all the black-footed ferrets we can get.
What'd you say?
Don't we need all the black-footed ferrets we can get?
Well, that is a question that there are actually people writing PhD theses about. I'm very pro, but... that's not a random example. That's a species that's on the verge of extinction, and it basically is susceptible to the Sylvatic plague, which is something that we've dealt with successfully. But there's a vaccine, but you can't go out and vaccinate 8,000 ferrets. But what you could do is take elements of the vaccine and edit them into ferrets so that when they mate, they are resistant to this plague. And that seems, again, in a laboratory, like it's working really well. So you can envision a situation where you edit in protection to this species. And that seems like a great thing, and it probably is. But I'm really pro this technology. It's just that it is absolutely critically important that we also remember that there are many unanswered questions. I really hate to do this in public, but I'm going to now quote Donald Rumsfeld, who basically said, you know, there are known unknowns and there are unknown unknowns. And he was right about that, because the unknown unknowns, when you start messing with the basic code of life, are many and very difficult to guess.
Well, Michael Spector will be at the Mehewi in Great Barrington on Friday night to present his talk, Editing the Human Genome, the Possibilities and Perils Michael, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Oh, for me too. Thank you.
Thank you. There'll be links to find out how you can find out more information about the event at the Mehewi, as well as this interview on our website, wamc.org/roundtable, wamc.org/roundtable.